This is Harry Hughes recording Arnie Lee, no, you don't record it, Arnie Lee and his family at Fairbanks, Alaska for Pine Ridge, Alaska, 2004 historical records. And Arnie, you go ahead and state your name on the tape, where you was born.
Bill. My name is Arnie Lee. I first came to Alaska in the spring of 1930. And
go ahead and talk about it. Where were you born?
I was born in Norway, in Sandy, Norway, in 1908. And I left the old country in January 1928. And landed in New York in the 1st of February 1928. Yeah. From New York, I went to San Francisco and worked in San Francisco on various jobs, building, construction, and so on and so forth. And in 1929, I went to Kodiak on a fishing for the Alaska package to San Francisco. And from Kodiak, I went back to San Francisco, spent another year in San Francisco, and then came up to Fairbanks, Alaska. I had a sister, or still have a sister, living in Fairbanks. For a few years I followed mining, about 4 years. And then one morning I came in, I walked into the Nordale Hotel and to see Roy Blockwood. He was at that time the manager of the hotel, Nordale Hotel. And he asked me if I wanted something to do, if I wanted a job in a hotel. So I told him okay. So I went to work that afternoon, and I've been there ever since.
You only had one job since you've been in Fairbanks then?
That's the only job, Harry, that I had. I just, as I said, I was mining for a few years on Fairbanks Creek, and that spring. I suppose I should tell you that, pardon me, that I went, I took a trip to Norway in 1934, and went back there and got married. Married to a girl that I went to school with back then. So, we were married, and I came back to Fairbanks.
Give her your maiden name on the tape.
Margaret Sandel was her name, S-A-N-D-O. So, we, at that time, I couldn't take the wife with me back at the same time. It was some certain immigration law or something that said that we had to be married, 6 months before I could take her out of the country.
Yeah.
So I left. I went back to Fairbanks, Alaska, and the wife. She stayed at home the following year when she came over. All right, Fairbanks. We have three children. Jean. And Ingrid and Norman.
Ingrid and Norman. Tell me their name and what they're doing. Just tell me their age and their name. Jean first. Yeah. How old is Jean?
Jean is 23. Yeah. She'll be 23. Jean will be 23 the 14th of December.
She's married and lives in Virginia.
She's married and living in Virginia.
December.
Mm-hmm. And the Indian and Norman is here with us now. They were born the 26th of February. Now, they will be 17. They'll be 18. 18, the 6th of February. They are seniors in high school at the present time, living home with us.
Now, Arnie, you tell me where you first lived when you got married here in Fairbanks, and about your dances and your party.
Well, we first lived in a little cabin down just about where Harry Hughes lives now.
No.
Well, where did you live? Well, but we didn't live there.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's where we lived.
Yeah. On the Wickersham?
No.
On Fort Wickersham. In Clarence Wolf's cabin. How long did you live there, Bob? For about a year? Let's think about a year. Then we moved down to 6th and, what was that lady's name?
226.
It's right across from you, Harry.
Next to Mrs. Wickens.
Yeah.
Because Andy remembers when you lived there.
And we lived there during the bad flood that we had in
1937.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I worked in the basement of the Nordhill that time, remember? I come there, went to work and pulled all the stuff out of the basement.
I remember you worked, you were looking after everything.
They gave me a job. I wasn't on the payroll till next July. You know, I come back and had a check for it.
Yeah. I know we had 3 feet of water in the basement.
That's
that
right.
And we brought everything we had downstairs, upstairs in the lobby, and piled up in the lobby. And we had everybody sitting on top of the trunks.
Sleeping around the hall,
sleeping
in the
bags.
Yes. You put beds in all the halls upstairs that
that's
time?
That's right. Yeah.
They moved all the dogs in on each side of the hotel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We did that too. Well, I don't know if there's anything else to do.
Well, during that flood, there was a bunch of youngsters going up and down the streets in a boat playing music, and there was one with an accordion. Do you remember who that was?
Oh.
They come right to the Lazy Street Hotel with a boat playing the accordion.
Oh, that
all night long.
Oh, I don't
see. I was working nights, so I got to see everything going on.
Oh, was that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know, Harry, I know. Well, I didn't get to see that. I suppose I was too busy elsewhere. Huh?
Well, I seen the sidewalks and the fences going down the river.
Yeah.
Remember those old boardwalks before that?
Yes. Well, I came down on a piece of sidewalk that night, I remember. Because it was one floating by the house up there, and I jumped on it, and I grabbed a piece of board and pulled it down to the back door of the hotel. Yes, I remember that too. Some places it was really deep, you know. Yeah, those were the days.
Now, while you're working there at the Nordhill Hotel, can you remember some of the famous people that come in there? Register since you've been working there?
Oh, yes, I can remember some, Harry. I suppose I should have thought of this before and had some of the names, but I know we had several movie stars down there. I know we had Lou Ayers, talked to him, and we had Joe E. Brown.
Was here when Louis was here?
Yeah. Well, they didn't stay in the Nordhill, but
no,
they stayed
the Pioneer.
Yeah. But they were in the hotel.
They came over.
Yeah. They were over there in the hotel in the lobby. The day that I landed down Chena Slough, you know, the plane was sitting in the Chena Slough. And Crossan was with him, and Zeppelin.
Leonard Zeppelin.
Yeah, Leonard Zeppelin. He was there with him too. I remember that I came into the lobby of the Nordhill in the morning. It was about 10, 11 o'clock when I came in there. Wireless Post and
Jill Crossan.
Yeah, Rogers and Foyle. Yeah. So, as I said, we had Lou Ayers, one movie star. We had Joey Brown, well, too. And we also had, we had Joe Louis there too, the boxer.
How about some of the miners that come in here? Early day miners, yeah, they used to be staying
at
the hotel when you went to work here.
Yeah, well, there were several miners there. Pat Savage has been mining for years and years. Gus Utila, been mining man for many, many years. And John Ugris
from
the Flat, and Sid Paulson. You remember Sid Paulson? He was an old mining man down there. And Hans Tillerson.
There used to be a bunch come in from Olness, down from Tenderfoot. They used to come in while I was there, and I don't remember all their names. I thought maybe you might remember some.
Well, I do, but
And the Miskoviches used to be in there regularly
when the
kids were just young.
They came every spring.
Come around the hotel almost every night.
Came in the fall and went outside and came back in the spring.
Jens Larson?
Oh yeah, Louis Larson.
You hit that on it, sound like a bomb dropping on this.
That was Louis Larson. You remember him,
yeah.
Harry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you remember he used to drink Muscatel wine all the time? He had a gallon. Sorry, he had a gallon jug with him all the time, Muscatel wine.
You have to hear some of the stories you got at Dawson.
Well, that's a fact. He had that. Every time he came to town, he had a gallon of Muscatel wine.
You don't remember how he used to have to guard that liquor store at the Nordale. You didn't know who was going to come in there and help themselves.
Oh, that's true, too.
Scotch whiskey would come in and it'd all be gone the next morning.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember when they used to take that and hide it.
Yes, those were great days. Sure were.
When old Bill Arthur was mayor of Nome one time. He ran the liquor store. Old Bill Arthur?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Because he passed on before we got any
recording. Yeah, well, that was Noreen's father-in-law. Yeah, he was in the liquor store for several years. Our liquor store.
You remember when they had the ball games here on Weeks Field, and Bush pilots used to always land there before the stateside planes even come in here?
Yes. Especially remember Harold Gillum, they came in from Barrow, the night, the moonlight night, he'd come in. Everybody was out in the street and said, there comes Harold, You could hear him coming way out, and then you'd see him fly right over the house tops, landed out there and you'd see the bright moonlight, 40, 50 below zero. I guess it was an open plane too, I don't know. It wasn't much. Well, I guess biplanes or whatever they call them now.
Yeah, two-wing biplanes.
I guess they were powered up.
You remember they had three old Ford, tri-motor planes three of them.
There's
one at Anchorage now. I don't know if it come from Fairbanks or not, but there's one up here at Anchorage set for the field.
Well, I remember Noreen had a Ford. For the triangle. That's the first one I had up there.
That's the one you see on some of these postcards, early day flying.
Boy, that was really something. That was a big plane in those days. My, a great big monster. And I remember I was out in the field one morning when they had the first bombers up here in Alaska. The first bombers.
The fighting ship that come in here.
Yeah, the first fighting ship. They were here, yeah.
About 39, those.
Yeah.
There was a flight of them coming. I remember something about it.
Yeah.
You weren't here when the Zeppelin made the flight over Alaska, were you? And it crashed on the way back to the east, you remember?
Yeah, well, I'm just before my time.
I was in Seattle when
that
flight.
Wasn't that in 29?
It was around that time. Yeah, I was in Seattle when that flight was made. It was either 20 or 29.
Yeah, well, I believe I was in Kodiak that time. When I heard.
No, it was the German.
The Akron,
that made the flight up here.
Oh, yeah. No, I wasn't here then. It was kind of bad. So?
Well, you didn't win your wife at one of those dances, but you did win something else. What was it?
When was that?
When you were playing for the dances on the raffle.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you mean, the car I won that time?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was 1936. I won the car. I know Thompson was the chief of police that time. Well, he was the chief of police, and I think it was the fire chief, too, at the same time. It was only him.
Or
was he? Well, anyway, I was in bed. I've been working night, so I was in bed when the Ida Thompson came up early in the morning, and he showed me a little stub, you know, for the ticket.
He was sleeping.
Oh, well, I was sleeping. Well, he showed it to my wife, and he told my wife that if we had the corresponding stub, you know, that he had a new car here for us, see. Oh, the wife woke me up, and I had to get up and try to find the stub. And I found him. Sure enough, I had the same number. So I put my robe on, and I told the chief, I said, "Well, I'll ride you back downtown." It was the third of July, wasn't it? So I asked, I told him, I said, "Well, I won't be able to get my license now, so." But he said, "That's all right, you can drive it today and tomorrow without a license," he told me. "That's okay." So that was it. So we had a new car, a 1936 Chevy. And, seemed like I had quite a bit of luck at that time. I won a trip to Seattle, too, at the same time. What was that later? Oh, well, anyway. So that was in 1936, yeah. Yeah.
Well, did you make the trip by water up here when you come up on the boat? When you come into the interior, you come by boat.
Yeah, I came up on the old Northwestern.
On the old Northwestern?
Yeah, but I came upstairs, you know. And there was at least 100 Chinese down going to the canneries.
You remember what the fare was at $29.50?
Well,
from Seattle, about that, was it? $31?
It was something like $30.
$31 was one time.
In stairs, yeah. But I had one suitcase, you know, with a lot of stuff in that I had from Norway that I couldn't find when I left the ship. With my suitcase, yeah. But there was at least 100 Chinese down in there, and about 10 white people, I guess, or white men, you know.
Well, that crew, the Chinese, were coming up to work in the cannery.
Yeah, they were working in the cannery that time, yeah. I don't know where they were going, but they all went off. No, they didn't go.
Now, Arnie, you want to talk a little teeny bit louder. You see that amplifier's kicking it out. Hear the amplifier kick it out now? When I'm just talking this way. You hold it in your hand.
You want to start it over?
Finish right off where you're talking about the camera, about the boat.
Yeah.
Come up in the boat.
Yeah, when I first came up, you mean, and
tell where you landed and what you seen and how you got into Fairbanks.
Well.
What kind of people traveled with you? And
yes, I as I said, I came up on the Northwestern, on the old Northwestern to Seward, and I traveled steered up. After we landed in Seward, I I was supposed to take the Alaska Railroad the following day to Fairbanks. When we got into Seward, there was it seemed like there was a lot of people there. We had trouble finding accommodation for the night. So one of these old miners, he told me where I could get a flop for 50 cents. So I told him, okay, I went over and took a look at this flop house and decided that I'd better sleep out in the lobby or walk the street tonight, something like that, because it didn't look very good to me. It was just a cot, small old fashioned cot with a bearskin rug or something on, you know. That's all it was, see.
That's the truth.
But I had already paid my 50 cents, but I walked out. There were several of those cops down there in this little building. So I went out in the lobby and I just sat there. It was just a tiny little lobby in this old hotel. I don't remember I believe it was the Seward Hotel. No, it couldn't have been. It was some other hotel. Anyway, I didn't sleep much that night. I just sat in an old chair in the lobby and slept, and got on the train in the morning, and on the way to Fairbanks. Of course, on the way to Fairbanks, I got to talking with people, with several miners, and that was on the way up, you know. This was in the springtime, and people were going back up north and start mining. So I remember it was when I landed in Fairbanks. Yeah, 8 o'clock at night. It was 16 below, I remember. It was in March when I landed in Fairbanks. I remember it was pretty cold. Of course, I had my sister in Fairbanks then, and so we went home. And the next day, my brother-in-law told me that we were going to go out in the creek and see, you know, how things were out in the creek, on Fairbanks creek. So I hunted around town to find a pair of boots, I remember, shoe packs, they call them, you know. So I went in the Bob Bloom store there on First Avenue and bought a pair of shoe packs. I remember the shoe packs cost $2.75 that time. I remember that so well because that's just about all the money I had that time. But I bought the shoe packs and the next morning we took off for Fairbanks Creek in an old T model Ford. We didn't get any further than up to the summit. Nellie Birch was operating that roadhouse, the summit roadhouse that time, and so that's as far as it got. We left the car, the T model Ford, there at her roadhouse, at the summit roadhouse, and we walked down the creek, hiked down the creek. It was just a small dog trail down the Fairbanks creek.
Stop one moment.
So after we got down to the creek, Harold had a cabin down on Walnut Creek in Fairbanks Creek. So I decided to stay down there for a while.
Sure.
So I lived in the cabin there for 2 or 3 months, and during 2 or 3 months, I believe it was, before I was offered a job with the Fairbanks Gold Dredging Company. So I went to work for them for 2 or 3 months that fall, and the
Yes, the winter in Fairbanks, the following winter, and then in the spring I went back out to work for the Fairbanks School Dredging Company again.
What do you call Fairbanks Exploration Company?
No, that was a Fairbanks Gold Dredging Company. It was an English company.
Company.
Yeah.
That's what you wanted. I want you to get straight on that.
That's right. No, it wasn't the FE. No, the Fairbanks Gold Dredging Company that time. So I stayed with them about five or six years. Season before I went to work in the Nordale Hotel. So I went to work in the Nordale in spring of 36. Yeah, in March 1936. Yeah.
You were there the spring before I came in the Nordale.
That's right.
I remember that.
Yeah, I was supposed to. I was just in town to pick up a few little things from the Quick. You know, I had no intention of staying in town, but. I was offered this little job that time. They were remodeling the Nordale Hotel that time. I remember the lobby was all torn up, the floors were all torn up, and we were just walking on the floor joists with a few boards, I remember, that time. So I went to work that following night, and I remember the first thing I did that night was I locked my lunch and my coat in the vault down there, you know. And of course I didn't have the combination that time, so I didn't have the lunch, and I had to wait till the morning because somebody else came on the job to get open the vault for me. See? Yeah. So that's how I got my start. The Nordale Hotel.
Well, that winter that you went to work there, they started the remodeling in the spring of the third floor.
Yeah, that's right. That was
Vic Rivers was the boss on the job.
That's right. Vic Rivers was the engineer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that in 41, Harry?
No, that was 37.
Oh, was it?
1937.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah, that's right. 1937, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we built on the third floor on that spring, yeah.
But I worked around there till after the flood, and I went down and worked on the railroad.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
And we had, that was May. It was 2 months later. We had 4th of July, and we come to town.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Jimmy Brown and Bobby Sheldon and myself got balled out for throwing firecrackers around town?
Oh,
now?
Yes.
Remember
right.
That?
Yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of fun that time. Well. Yeah. Now I'm going to let Amy Lee tell me her name.
You want me
and
to hold it?
You go ahead and hold it and talk right into it.
My name is Ingrid, and I'm the youngest daughter of Mr. Arnie Lee. I'm 17 now and a senior at Lathrop High School. I think next year that I'll be going to Oregon State in Corvallis, Oregon, and be studying fashion designing. I hoped sometime in the future, I don't know when it'll be, to go to Norway again and visit the home of my parents, but that may be a long time off. However, I hope to finish college and go into the field that I'm going to be studying there. I don't know exactly what field of fashion I'm going into and what exactly I'd like to do in the way of work after I get out. But some field of fashion designing, I think.
And how do you like the country here where you was raised?
Oh, I love it. But I don't know too much what the other states are like, because the last time I was out in the States was I was only 3 years old, and I don't remember much. We went through the United States on our way to Norway, and we stayed there a year, and I was 4 years old when I came back. But I don't remember a thing. When I left here, I spoke some English. My brother and I did. But when we came back, we couldn't speak any English at all. All we knew was Norwegian. But I've forgotten all my Norwegian already. My sister, which was who was 8 years old when she was over there, she does remember it, and she can still speak some, and she writes a lot.
Jeannie? Mm-hmm.
She, Jean Marie Lee, but now her married name is Mrs. William E. Schreier, and she's living in Virginia, and I haven't seen her for since last June, and she just had a baby October 14th.
What's the name of the baby?
David Christian Schreier, mm-hmm. And it was 8 pounds and 11 ounces when he was born.
Okay, Jeannie, now how about getting your brother down here and get him to talk?
My name's Norman Lee, and I live here where everyone else does, at 1506 3rd Avenue. And I'm in high school right now. I'm a senior, Lathrop High School. I'm participating in the band, and I like it quite well. And I also have a real nice hobby, electronics, and I've always been interested in it. And I plan in the future years possibly to go into electrical engineering, or more specific, electronics engineering. And I'll probably be going up here my first 2 years to the University of Alaska, and maybe I'll go to some other college in the States a few years later. But I also want to go in the music field too. I can't do both naturally, but I want to take music on the side. I got a new trumpet just about a month ago, and it should last me for quite a while. And I don't know if I can go into any professional trumpet playing at all, but I'd like to get in the dance band or something when I get older and play, because I really enjoy it. And I want to learn a lot more about electronics. It's a very interesting field. I've got a ham operator's license now, and it's lots of fun to talk to other people. I enjoy talking with other people in different states. I also have talked to a few foreign countries, although not too many as yet. I've talked to Japan, and I've talked up in Greenland, and where else have I talked? I talked to Ice Island before it disappeared. About a month before it disappeared, I was talking to a guy up there, and he was telling how the ice was going away and everything, and it was really interesting. It's not actually too far from Alaska, but
what's the furthest station away that you've got? Do you remember the call letters and the name of the person you talked to?
Let me see. Well, the farthest place away would, I talked to the Belgian Congo one time. That was on code, CW, they call it. And his call letters, I believe, were OZ5KL, I think was his call letters, and his name was Jim. And we didn't talk too long because the band was not in too good condition. It was on 15 meters, which is about 21.3 megacycles I was on. And it was quite a short contact, but it was still a nice thrill to be able to talk to someone that far away.
Now, what is the size of your equipment? The wadding room thing?
Well, I'm running a DX40 transmitter. It's one I built in a kit. It's a Heath kit, and it's worked out pretty good. It's real low power, but it gets out fine. And the antenna is a Hornet tri-band beam. I built that also, but it comes in kit form from the factory. The receiver is an SX-28. It's a fairly old one. It became obsolete in 1938. I think that's when they stopped making it. But it's a real good receiver. It's quite heavy and big, bulky, but it's very nice receiver. Of course, it's not up to date like these new receivers are, and it doesn't have all the features that the new one does. But it's fine for what I have right now.
Who is some of the local boy friends here that talk with you on your radio locally?
Well,
get some of their names.
In town here, naturally we get down on the lower band, 80 meters, which is about 3.5 megacycles. And there's quite a few guys around town here. I haven't been on too much this winter because it would interfere with my schoolwork. But and also, I don't have an antenna for this band right at the moment. You need a long antenna, about 120 feet long, to do much around town. But Al Weber is the person that got me started. He's chief engineer for KFRB, and he's a real nice guy. And he taught me my code about 2 years ago. I learned my code. Took me 2 months, I believe, to learn the code. And then I got my novice license. And 4 months later, I got my technician license. And 2 months later, I got my general class license, which permits me to talk on phone. Fred Brown is a boy. He's about my age. And he was one of my best buddies on the radio. There's quite a few others in town that I better not talk about. I'm using some tape up and everybody's hollering
what
here.
What was your hardest experience that you had on your radio and talking to different hams?
Where? Locally or what?
Some odd experience, something that's out of the ordinary.
Well, I can't seem to think of anything right now. I don't think there's been anything real odd, because if there was anything that happened odd, it would probably be against rules and regulations, because everything on radio is supposed to be just so-so, and if anything happens that's not supposed to, you get in trouble somehow.
See, when I was an amateur in Los Angeles, when I was your age, I had a half KW set, and I talked as far as Australia on code. But my call letters were 6HH, and we had no regulations or license. I also had one of the first radio tubes that was sold for hams, or amateurs, by Lee DeForest.
Well, that sounds pretty good. Someday maybe I hope to get a kilowatt or something, too. Yeah, that is quite a rig if you can get anything like that.
You blink all the lights in the area.
Yeah, every time you put on the... Fire up.
Everybody in the air knew when I was on the air.
Yeah, okay, well, we will stop now.
Mrs. Lee, now, you tell something about your trip on there. Have the boy, you ask her questions.
What trip?
Well,
I think the Lee has had enough tape on there now.
Oh, yes, I got lots more on there.
I said, I think they had spent enough tape on the Lees already.
Here, you talk.
Well... I don't have much to talk about. I stay home all the time. And look after, see that the wheels go down, you know.
Well, your family's getting big now. One of these days you're going to be kind of alone.
That's right. Then I don't know what I'm going to do. I guess I'll just travel around and visit everybody then. Just suppose. I just was back to see Gene.
You made a trip out to see Gene?
Mm-hmm.
How was your trip? Describe your trip out.
Oh, that was
How'd
wonderful.
How did you travel?
I traveled with jet all the way to Baltimore.
How long did it take you from here to get there?
Let's see. I figured it out at about 8.5 hours flying time.
From here to Virginia.
And the time that I came, the first time, it took almost a month from New York.
Your first trip was a month, and then...
The first time that I came from Norway to Fairbanks. I left Norway the 21st of January, and I came to Fairbanks the 2nd of March. And that time we didn't have any airmail, you know. It took 2 months in order to get an answer on the letter that you sent.
So you made it down to Seattle in about 4 hours.
Now, No, it was less than that. It was 3 hours and 20 minutes, or less than that. Mm-hmm. And that's fast flying. Yeah, the jet flying, that's wonderful. I like that. I came back on the DC-6, and I thought that was pretty rough. I think of just 20 years ago, we didn't even have any, airmail.
Describe your first cabin that you had down there, and what you used for fuel, and how you lived. And how little money you had to spend. Because some of these new people don't have any idea of how the first ones here had to do.
Well, when I came from Norway, and I came to Fairbanks, I didn't even speak a word of English, and I had quite a time, you know, going shopping and so forth to the stores. And I had never seen crooked floors before that they meet you when you come in the door. And you walk uphill and then you go downhill again. Threshold into a bedroom and then you go up again. And then... Oh, an old-fashioned stove. I wasn't much of a cook anyway. I hadn't had time much to cook, but I tried. And Arnie, he wouldn't eat my pies, and I cried. He wouldn't eat, but that was, I think, mainly the stove. You know.
The wood burner.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they had a big barrel in the corner, you know, that they put water in. That the man came around with water. You remember the water wagons we had? They came up and down, sold so many buckets.
Summertime he had water wagon. The wintertime, Pop Wiener used to bring chunks of ice around.
That's right.
He used to haul ice to the dollar for water.
Then the...
There's very few people. That's what I wanted to tell those things that nobody talked about here.
Then we had these big tanks of water. You know, we're going to wash clothes. We put lye in the water at night so it would be soft in the morning so we could wash clothes and all the... The rusty,
rust would settle down,
and then we take
the water.
Bail out the water and heat it in a big boiler on your wood stove, and that's the way we did it in those days. And when I lived out at Fairbanks Creek, I lived out there for about a month with Arnie when I first came here, and it was an old cabin, and well, there may be lots of others have had much worse places to stay in, but it looked pretty rugged to me, coming from a larger city.
Were they still using candles and oil lamps quite a bit when you first come into Fairbanks?
Not in Fairbanks, no.
Not right now?
No, it was electric light. Mm-hmm. But out on the creeks, you know, the windows were even with the ground.
They had coal oil lamps on the creek.
Yeah. And they had these big 5 gallon cans, you know, all up around the cook stove in the back, you know. That was the way they were. Old cabins. And Mrs. Birch up in the
Summit Road
house, she stopped by every time she came down, asked if there was anything I needed in town. And I couldn't speak very much English then. And I said I needed some to cook coffee and I needed something to scrub the floor with. So she said, "Don't do too much of that in this old place." And it was that we lived next door. Egan's was one of the boys. There wasn't anybody out there that time, and he came over to the house and asked if he could borrow a broom, and I didn't know what the broom was at the time. And I said, "You look and fine." So he found the broom, and he went off, and I learned another word then, you see. I learned what broom was. So it was pioneering in some way. Learning the language, too. And fighting mosquitoes.
They don't believe it, you see, and I seen it even the first trip up. See, in 1925, I hit Ketchikan on a PT boat, you see, but we only just stayed overnight, or part of the night. We got out of there when we got provisions and fuel back on the boat, and we went back to Seattle. That's the first trip.
Yeah. Well,
when I wrote home about how it was out there, there was only a couple of houses on the way from Fairbanks, you know, to Fairbanks Creek. It was the roadhouse at the summit, and a couple of old buildings on the way out. It was Fox, I guess. That was one of them.
Max was running the store at Fox that time, wasn't he?
Yeah. Let me see, who was it that took us up? That was Billy Road. Billy Road. he took us up to Summit. And then Mrs. Birch took us down to Fairbanks Creek. And she is about the best driver I've ever seen. Anybody. To drive in those big muddy tracks or ruts down there. And Arnie, he cut me wood, you know. He worked 12 hours. He came home in the evening and he would cut me enough wood so I could get along during the day, you know. And one day came a big truck along and it was so muddy, the road, and they took all my wood, so I didn't have any more wood. And I went up in the woods to cut wood myself, you know, rebrush. And then I walked, after I did that, I walked up around the hills and came over to, well, what was his name, the one that was postmaster. Guy Birch? No.
No.
Yeah, no. Bill Gertz.
That's right.
Bill Gertz, he was the postmaster.
That was Bill, too.
And he said, was that you up in the hills? I said, yes. He said, don't go up there. He said, it's bare up there. So I never went up in the hills anymore.
Right at the bears, huh?
Yeah. So that was the first start in Fairbanks. And
well, you've got a nice modern home now. Everything
well,
in it.
I wouldn't say it's so modern.
It's fairly modern compared to what we used to have.
Oh, that's right. It's fine.
You still have the coal furnace. You didn't convert to us, did you?
No.
That's the one thing you still have. When you convert to oil, you're right up to date.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have gas one of these days pretty soon, too.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So everything else.
Well,
I think you have earned too much tape on
that. No, no. These little details like this in later years, they come in awful nice for somebody to hear them, like the kids.
I don't think that.
You get married and have a family and they come back here?
My voice.
I'm going to let you hear it back then, and I want to thank you for this much, and Arnie's going to play us some music on the next roll.
Okay.